Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I am your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, we have the triumphant return of a fan favorite from a long time ago that it's honestly my failing as a host. It's been this long since I've had you back on. But hello, Matthew McWaters.
Hey there, Jay. I'm happy to be here.
So, Matt, can you introduce yourself to everyone?
Oh, yeah, sure. Hi, I'm Matt. I go by McMattMatt, and I'm plenty of other nicknames in the War Machine community overall. I've been playing the game for quite a long time now. I'm just really, really happy that despite everything that's going on in the world and everything that's existing, at least War Table exists, so we can grind games and play with my my friends I've made at WTC and all the other cons around the world. It feels good to be able to play against people everywhere anytime I want, pretty much. Yeah.
So have you been getting in mini games via the War Table?
Yeah, so for a while there, I was not super hype on playing online. I was like, well, if I'm going to sit in my house in my undies and play games, I'd rather just be playing actual computer games. But over time, you know, the thirst for some War Machine content and just missing a lot of my friends in the community really,
right,
really led me to play on War Table. And, you know, the nice thing about War Table is just between like all the different time zones and stuff, because I work at home, I get like 2 to 3 games a day,
nice,
which is just like the ideal amount of War Machine. You know, like when you're playing like 14 to 21 games a week, it's a lot of fun.
Nice. Well, just as a reminder on the format, we're going to have a conversation for about 45 or 50 minutes in the first episode, and then we will have a bonus episode where everyone who is subscribed to the Patreon will be able to listen to that. We do have the new tiers active, so be sure you sign up on that. And I think we're ready to dive into questions from our patrons. So, the first one, first person in this time is James Moops Morehouse, and he says, "Why is the rec community so mopey, and why do they think so much of their good stuff was bad?"
So that's actually a really good question that isn't just about the rec community. I think it's a lot of the communities online in general. I've had this conversation so much in the last week with people where in the like face of all the new releases that have come out, like Death Archons, the Ret CID, the ongoing CG CID, and so on, people just like have opinions that you know, their opinions. People feel specific ways. Ret, for a long time specifically, has never really been the kind of faction that asks strong questions. Ever since, like, the transition away from Mark II, where Ron was, like, a dominant force in the meta, and you would just Ron people, Ret, and, like, you lost Raven, Voice of the Nine, or Will of the Nine, whatever the super awesome Strike Force theme was back in Mark II, Ret just hasn't had like the kind of list that is like A, meta dominant, and B, question formatted. A lot of War Machine, especially in Mark III, is like this like hyper positioning intensive game. And what ends up happening is it's very easy for players like Ret players who have these like really flexible dynamic models, and pretty much have always had those flexible dynamic models, to look at the factions which have like strong stat skews, like Kador and Menoth, and like their game plans are like usually no matter what the matchup is, they're pretty much the same, right? Like Harbinger, pretty much no matter the matchup, is like push your models forward and be really annoying and hard to kill. Where Ret has to have this like very dynamic way it approaches the game, where you're like, okay, cool, maybe my Jacks are shooting this turn instead of being in melee, and like now that changes the way I have to allocate focus and where everything has to stand to get line of sight and everything. And so like Ret the ret community in general has always kind of been like, well, why isn't our stuff as good as faction X, Y, or Z? And I think that just leads to this like overall mopiness where ret has always had good models and themes, and especially post the CID that just came out not too long ago, their models and themes and their overall access to just like tools in general is so strong. And like still after this like amazing CID that's completely changed like a lot of the fundamental like solutions the faction has to problems, people are still mopey. They're just like, oh my god, oh, you know, Falseer isn't as insane as she was week one of CID. And I'm like, yeah, Falseer's still one of the best casters in the game. What are you talking about? And then like you look at like the Executioners and the Wardens and like the changes to Rissavas and all this stuff, and you're just like, how are you still sad? And like, I get that there was a period of time where like every ret player was like, my pairing is a 2-trident list and a 2-trident list, and that's really boring. I 100% get that like point of view, but like that worked since the dawn of the game. You take the strongest stuff and then you play the strongest stuff, and then like that's how it works. And like of course like matchups change and lists get more tools, so things get stronger or weaker depending on like the matchups you play and like the people you play against. But yeah, I think in general people look for excuses for why their things aren't working the way they work in their head, and it's much easier to blame the faction, model, caster, whatever, than it is to blame like, oh, I just didn't do this right, or oh, this matchup was actually just bad and I thought it was.
His follow-up question is, why are Rissavas completely stupid?
Oh my god. So Rissavas are, I think, the number one winner of the CID. Okay, maybe not the number. They're like the number. They're amazing. I can't even put a number on how like what the winner of the CID is, but they are by far the best Weapon Master Warrior unit in the game now, I think. And it's not because of their output. Their output isn't like the best thing ever. But Rissavas, okay, so like let's just get a quick rundown. They're 12-16s. Sorry, defense 12, armor 16. Mat 7 and Power 10 Weapon Masters. 2-inch reach, speed 6. They're not Pathfinder. They have tough innately, and while they're base-to-base with another model in their unit, they are immune to knockdown, plus 2 defense against melee, and then they're also girded on top of that. So, like, already innately, for a 15-point unit, they are very, very durable against almost any threat. So, like, just base, the like Mat 7 on infantry is amazing. Weapon Master means that, like, even at power 10, they're good enough that, like, lighter targets, they just, like, cut through. And then we get into Aelith Veer, the main man of the hour. Aelith Veer gives them Vet Leader, which is actually the worst of the two bonuses he gives them. The other one is Dying Wish, which is when they die, they make a melee, they make an attack. So, like, against other melee armies, you're like, I charge in, and you're like, cool. They're like, I kill a Rissavas. You're like, tough? No? Okay. I kill your guy back. Okay, now my model dies. So, in my games I've been playing ret into a lot of Grimkin, and Naslayers are really, really sad when they're like, I have a 6 model unit, and you're like, okay, you're going to lose this fight, and there's basically nothing you can do about it. So yeah, Rissavas are nutty. So there's even like some really crazy things you can do with them where because you have a Lara 0 or a Lara 1 for Ghostwalk on them, you can Ghostwalk them and run them to surround the enemy's Warcaster or Warlock. And if they try to unjam them, you just do attacks on their Warlock or Warcaster. And then if they don't unjam them, you just have a bunch of Weapon Masters at Mat 8 sitting around their Warcaster. It's pretty cool. I'm a huge fan of them.
Pretty cool. For one of the players, yes, that's probably accurate. All right, so next question. He says, why is Shadow such a fundamentally flawed theme?
Okay, so there's a lot of ways this question could be interpreted. So I think the fundamental way that I think Shadows is a very good theme. in specific criteria. So, but I think the core problem with Shadows is that their overall, like, the overall design of the models is you can't really have buffs for Strike Force. So this is like one of the big things that Shadows actually got in the update. But so for those that are not super following along with the like updates and CIDs, there's a couple changes that are really impactful for Shadows. First and foremost, Iris 3 now gives her unit of Infiltrators Mark Target. Granted Mark Target and Tough, or Tactics Tough, I think. So now Shadows has Mark Target, which it never had. And then Strike Force now have Dispel on the unit commander, and everything has, like, Repo and AD and Infiltrators Ambush now. And, like, that's, like, the overall, like, kind of concept of the theme. The problem with the theme is that I guess if I were to interpret this question, I would say the flaw of Shadows is that it's innately imbalanced due to the overall power level of the Strike Force as compared to the Infiltrators. Basically, they can't do anything to Shadows to make Strike Force meaningfully better because they are like a premium assassination unit, and if that premium assassination unit gets a reliable set of tools to kill casters, then it, like, the game's over. Like, we saw this in Mark II with Raven and her theme force, where you would just, like, feet, snipe, and their caster would die every game. And now we're kind of, like, back there with Shadows and Falseer, where you can have, like, Rat 10 Strike Force ignoring cover, concealment, and line of sight, and they're, like, shooting power 14 to 16 reroll damage shots on a caster. And, like, because of that imbalance, like, there's, like, no caster in the game that survives through 22 of those shots. So, like, right. because of that imbalance of, like, Strike Force have really good ranged offensive potential, they can't really do anything to the melee side of it either. Because if they buff any component of the theme or give any more tools to the theme just becomes insane. And, like, it has, like, a lot of innate rules on it, like Pathfinder, Stealth, magical, blessed, like, the whole army has, like, this, like, bouquet of rules that, a collage of rules, that make it really hard to do anything and release models for them. And I think that, like, ends up being the problem with Shadows, is it just doesn't really have a lot of room to grow meaningfully.
Right. So, next question, he says, why aren't Tridents 20 points and bad for Rhett's health?
So I think Tridents are fine. So Tridents are obviously a really good battle engine. They have their weaknesses though, and I think that if you were to analyze like the meta a year or two ago, about a year ago, I don't think you would see Retribution really be dominant on the back of Tridents. I think the meta had kind of adjusted to overall deal with them. Like, Tridents were still amazing. They were they're really good. There's no debate. And like, they're very like flexible and durable and have a lot of really good traits. But like, I don't think they were like this. I mean, they were obviously a big part of the meta, but I don't think, I think every faction has outs to Tridents. And I think that's fine. As far as like why they're bad for Rhett's like overall faction health, and why they're not 20 points, I think the problem with having individually strong models that are available in multiple themes is that it makes it hard to give like other things to the faction. So like you kind of have this effect in Scorn with the Siege Animantarax, where it's such a good battle engine that it's hard to give like casters that have like cool buffs and stuff and like solos that have cool buffs to Scorn without making the Siege Animantarax insane. And Tridents kind of have that same effect where like, if you have a Hermit and a Trident, your Trident's, like, insane now. And then, like, you have a caster that has a hit buff or a damage buff, it gets, like, even more insane. And so it makes it hard to, again, like, grow the theme forces that these Tridents are allowed in. I don't think Tridents are overpowered. I don't think they need a points increase. I think that they definitely, like, shape a lot of matchups for Rhett, but I think that a lot of factions have grown, especially with these Riot Quest solos, wherein they have a lot of shooting resilience. Like, I know Trolls, Mercs, and Minions have access to Gudrun the Wasted as a friendly faction model. And, like, having your models just have two extra defense against a Trident is usually enough where the Trident loses a lot of its efficiency. And this kind of, like, holds true for other factions that have good anti-shooting tech.
Okay. And then the final question from James. He says, poking the bear, why are Manticores so broken?
So Manticores are, like, so I said Risavos were the biggest winners. Maybe it's Manticores. Maybe they're tied. The like overall profile of Warjacks in War Machine, right? Like the stat line that most Warjacks share, I would say like predominantly is Mat 6, and predominantly they don't have like okay guns. They're like if you look at the Ironclad as like the closest comparison to a Manticore, they're both Mat 7, they're similar POW. And then, like, they're the same defense and armor. Like, the Manticore has more boxes. And then you're like, oh, and then the Manticore also has a gun. And also regenerates its shield 5 points for one focus. And then, like, you're like, oh, and then they're the same points cost.
Seems fine.
Yeah, you're like, these two models are really not the same power level. And then you add on top of that, like, Rhett has Arcanists. So you can make Manticore's power, Mat 7 power 19 melee beaters for 14 points. It's like they're just a really flexible like utility. They're a flexible heavy that will kill other heavies because Mat 7 power 19 is no joke. They don't need any buffs from casters to perform. And then like on turns where they're not doing stuff in melee, they have a gun they can shoot. And like a boostable POW 12 is like pretty decent in the age of Archons and Solos and Infantry.
Okay, so the next question was Imperial, he says, it's a follow-up to James. He says, seriously, though, why have Rhett players been such victims and down on their incredible toys? I don't know that you need to necessarily go into that since you already covered it some, but...
I'll just touch on one. I think one salient point here is that, or one important thing to mention is that every faction has people like that. I think I said this before. It's just... There's you know, the squeaky gear gets the grease or whatever the saying is. It's the people, there's players in every community that have an idea of what, or have an opinion on what, how things should be. And sometimes these people are extremely loud. And like this opinion becomes loud enough that other people agree with it. Right. And or they like align themselves with it. And like sometimes these opinions are right and things do need change. Sometimes they're wrong. I would just say that, like, largely ignore other people's opinions, and stick to your own opinions, as long as it makes you happy to do so. Like, as long as it's beneficial to you in your mental health and your enjoyment and your whatever, form your own opinions, and as long as you're not hurting anyone or doing anything like that, like, as long as you're not the problem, just be a happy part of the community and be the counterbalance to the negativity and the whininess.
Okay, so the next question is from Benep. He says, why are House Elowir Wardens and their solos, the Executioners, so gosh darn insanely good, especially compared to all other factions' medium-based infantry-slash-equivalent rolled models, and yet the Rhett community thinks they're poop?
So there's this thing in Rhett where they don't have a lot of inner army synergies for their infantry. I don't know if this is still true. Like you have Ghostwalk now, which is like really good, but generally speaking, you don't have a lot of caster independent buffs for your infantry. So like if we look at like the best medium based infantry in the game in general, you look at like Tharn Ravagers, War Spears, Warmongers, and like to a lesser extent Chosen. Chosen are amazing, but they're not really medium infantry, they're large base cav. And then like you kind of like Trollblood Champions, Wardens, like you look at all of the, or Warders, sorry. You look at all of the like top performing medium base dudes that are relevant in the meta, could be relevant in the meta. The thing that they all have in common is that they have inner army synergies that are not from their caster. So, like, this is the problem Rhett's always had, is that their models are amazing stat-wise, but, like, the only buffs they have for them come from their casters. So, while, like, you'd be like, oh, man, the wardens are like these mat 7 cleave parry insane like 14-20s against melee attacks, like, and then you compare them to warmongers and you're like, oh, warmongers are just like statistically better in most cases because you have an extra 60 points of support models that make them better. And it's like, those two things are comparable, right? Like, ret players are upset because they compare them to the models that have all of these buffs on them. And they're like, dude, Tharn Ravagers with 3 corpses and all this stuff are better. It's like, well, yeah, of course they are. They have like 30 points of support in the list to support them. But like, wardens are phenomenal. They are, if they release as their final CID's rules were printed, they will fundamentally change a lot of the way Retribution gets to play matchups. You can win matchups off the back of these medium base guys where previously you were unable to. And like, previously you didn't have those tools. And like the solos, if they release as they were the last week of CID, the solos are phenomenal. They're like mini archons for less points. They're really, really good. They're not like super durable. I mean, they're pretty durable, but they're not the end all be all of durability. And like, you can counterplay them and interact with them. But again, I think the big thing that we need to talk about when we talk about these things for Retribution is that there aren't a ton of out of caster buffs for them. And the casters that do bring buffs to them are going to be very focus strapped, being to kind of like provide all those buffs. So it's all contextual, right? Like, in some matchups, even without a ton of buffs, they're going to be dominant and just like scythe through, you know, 20 models a turn, and people are going to be like, oh my god, this is insane. And then in other matchups, you're going to need to have all kinds of like hit buffs and armor buffs and, you know, pathfinder solves and all kinds of other things to make them function. So I think that's like largely where the Retribution community kind of where the difference in viewpoint ends up. Like, Retribution looks at other factions who have all the buffs and like that they can just pile into their list and is like, why aren't we like that? And then like the outside of Retribution community is like, that's because your faction design space isn't to have a creel stone, right?
One thing I will say real quick is that I'm not sure the last part of his question. He says, you know, why does the ret community think they're poop? As a retailer, I can say that they've actually been pre-selling extremely well. So I guess at least some segment doesn't think that they're poop.
Yeah, I definitely pre-ordered my my big stacks of medium base Elowir boys. I am super excited to watch them just scythe through a series of infantry models and then kill a heavy.
All right, so next question from Ben Up. He says, is any caster knocking Asteria from her throne after CID?
So, okay, personally, I think Asteria is not as amazing as everyone seems to think she is. I think she's a very good caster. I think she has a lot of tools, and she does things that are impactful. But basically, I don't think I've ever taken Asteria to a con. I think I almost always would rather play a like dedicated like set of tools that like solve specific problems than a general just like math fix. That's just like my viewpoint. I think Falseer is better than Asteria in almost every single way, and I think Falseer is just like bananas. Falseer is the coolest caster in Retribution, one of the coolest war casters, and probably cooler than any warlock. Falseer is so cool. I give Falseer a 10 out of 10. Besides Falseer, New Thyron's really interesting. So I think people took Asteria because like it's just her feet is just a really easy button to press. Like, you're like, oh, I have tridents. Oh, I have like models that need to do things. I feet, and then like everything's super efficient. I get a bunch of work done, and then like I probably win the game off that, or I lose. Like, and you end up in this situation where you create like a just a really really good math fix. And then like Blinding Light's a good spell. But like that's kind of the entirety of Asteria's kit in most lists, right? Like, you have like the arm buff and Viable Resolve, you have Blinding Light, and then you have Crusader's Call, and then you have her feet. And it's like, those are all fine things, but I don't think they're really things that like drive the meta. Assyria is dominant when the models around her are dominant in the matchup. If the models around her are not dominant in the matchup, she feels really weak.
I know we have lots of questions coming on Falseer, so that'll be good to dive into. Next question, he says, I don't see very many Vire Jacks other than maybe the occasional Banshee or now maybe Aeternae. Why is that?
So, Aeternae, isn't Aeternae like a Elowir Jack on a Vire chassis or something? Isn't that like...
Sure.
I mean, whatever. It's one of those weirdnesses. House Vire Jacks are like the Harpies and the Sirens, right? Because Shael is like all the Manticores, Griffins, and Gorgons. And maybe he just means like the heavies specifically, because I feel like the light Vire Jacks are played more than any other Jack. I know that I run into a ton of Harpies, and I've definitely played my fair share of Harpies. But I think the question could be answered kind of like by theme, like the theme restrictions, right? So like the only themes you really play a lot of Jacks in is Forges. So, and Forges is restricted to House Shael Jacks. So because you're kind of restricted in this setting, you're not going to see a lot of non-Shael Jacks. But like to get to like the like in Defenders and other themes, like you're really only taking like probably two War Jacks in total, maybe three, because now you're taking a Lara one. So I guess the answer is, I start almost every list with a Banshee now. Banshees are phenomenal. And I know most of my other Rhett friends and most people I know started almost every list with a Banshee as well, which is a Vire Jack. Big fan of it. The Banshee now has Grievous on its melee weapons base, which is just like super good. It had its slam gun is more reliable. It's Rat 6 base. Like it got a lot better in a lot of ways. And it was already, I think, the most played Warjack overall. And then you can like the Daemon's really good now. The lights are really good. I don't know if I see a bunch of them. I just think that outside of Forges, like you have two Warjacks and most casters want an Arknote. So you have like a Banshee and a Chimera, right?
Okay. Next question from Ben up. He says, what's your take on Thyron? He seems a bit too binary for my taste.
So this has kind of always been one of those weirdnesses of War Machine. We can look at the lens you look at casters through is really weird, right? Like, there's a lot of casters who are like just insane stat boosters. So, Scar 1 is a really good example of this in Krix. Scar 1 is basically, like, takes the need to hit out of the game and takes the need to roll damage out of the game.
Excuse me.
And, yeah, no worries. And what ends up happening is, like, if your list is, like, very flexible and has, like, a lot of ways to engage, those kind of, like, stat fixes are very powerful. Like, Assyria is a good example of this. Like, Assyria changes the fundamental way math works. And, well, it doesn't change how math works. It changes how your list math works. And, like, that makes your list more effective. So, Thyron kind of does the same thing, right? Like, except the difference being that Thyron doesn't change your, like, hit rolls meaningfully. I mean, like, his feet obviously makes your warrior models hit more. But, like, he's a very strong caster. Fury's a good spell. Like, he's good in melee. His feet can be very powerful. But, again, yeah, his game plan isn't very dynamic. His game plan is like, my stuff hit hard and then it kill much. And that's, I guess, yeah, you could say that's a little bit binary. But that doesn't mean he's any less powerful. Like the Irisk 2 list that was dominant in the meta for a long time was literally just my models walk towards you until they charge you. And there was no deeper thought process in it. And sometimes when your numbers are good enough, you don't need a plan. You just need to push your models into the opponent's models until they grind to dust.
Yeah, I know that, like, back in the day, when I was playing in WTC, Michael Ireland was always a huge fan of Thyron, and I didn't really understand why. But next question from Bennett. He says, any tips for playing against Double Tridents? As a Scorn player, the Assyria Double Trident matchup is giving me headaches like none other.
So, specifically Assyria, huh? There's a lot of ways you can approach this. So I played a Resheth list, 2 years ago, a year ago. Time is so weird now. I don't know how to... The last season of Cons, I was playing the shit out of this Scorn list that, with Resheth, double Animantarax, and a Supreme Guardian in it. And that list, was dominant in the Trident matchup, because you have Arcane Vortex for Blinding Light, and you have Arm debuffs and Death debuffs. You just blow Tridents off the table. You can reach out and touch and threaten models too. So, like, Assyria has to be, like, super wary and, like, keep her Arcane Vortexes and her Tridents in relevant positions. And then, like, between Force Barrier, the Valkyries in the list, and I think eventually, I don't know if we ended up getting Hermit in the list or not, but between, like, all the, like, different layers of protection, you largely ignore Trident's ranged output. Like, they just weren't very scary. That list was super cool into that. So that is probably where I would start. If you're looking at playing, like, Siege Animantaraxes into the matchup, look at something like that. Besides that, I don't think you want to play Immortals into that matchup. That seems really bad. I know at OTC 2 years ago, I tabled, like, 3 Zol players playing my Ossian Tridents list. So I don't think you want to be there. So I would look at something like the double Siege Animantarax Supreme Guardian list.
Okay. Benup's next question is, Gret seems to have few Riot Quest options available to them. If you would design a model concept for a Riot Quest character for Rhett, what would it be and what would it do?
Oh, boy. So I think Rhett largely has the best Riot Quest solo available to them in the form of Scythe. So Scythe is bananas. So if you were to have me create something that was not Scythe, I think I'd want to create something for maybe a Legion of the Dawn. To make the army a little less just go forward and hit things with swords. Maybe like a Dragoon model that makes your Cav a little bit more durable to guns or does something along those lines. Yeah, I think I just want to create Dragoon models. That's where I'm at. I want to create like 14 new Dragoon models and have every faction have a new one, because Dragoon models are super cool.
I was thinking you were saying 14 new Rhett Dragoons, and it was going to be like all the Pretty Horses list or something.
Oh, I'm My Little Pony? Oh, I'm in. I don't even know what the name of them are, but just have like a bunch of Dragoons. You can paint them all rainbow colors. It'll be great.
Final question from Benup. He says, why doesn't Raven see more play?
So, I played Raven at Lock and Load, the last Lock and Load that happened. And I made it to the finals with Raven, and played against Iona, almost won the game. It was really close. I think if the moving House of Doom doesn't stop me and, the Storm Raptor doesn't roll like a 13 on Raven, I think I win, or a 15 or whatever. It was a really tight game, and like, it was really, really tight, and, like, a few rolls changed the entirety of, like, on both sides, right? Like, I had a really good turn, then he had a really good turn, and it, like, went back and forth. And so to answer your question why Raven doesn't see more play, I think that, in general, Raven doesn't really change math, right? Like, Raven gives you boost to hit, snipe, and, like, she's a pretty good melee combatant, but she's not the kind of, like, army support that is generally dominant in matchups. Because like, the way the game works right now and, like, how you have to play scenarios, snipe isn't as relevant. It's not like previously in Mark II and early in Mark III, snipe was, like, a really important spell to have because, having a unit with snipe meant that you could, like, reach out and touch things. But because of how scenario works, everything's kind of in a pile in the middle already. Most lists are just like sitting on the edges of scenarios anyways, which makes Snipe not as relevant. So like there's realms where or matchups where Raven is fine. But the problem is she just doesn't do anything to help your list really, really just win games. Like, she can win games. She has boost to hit and Swift Hunter and all the stuff. She does things. But she doesn't change the math of the matchup. Because, like, it's much easier to just, like, take, like, Ossian as an example and build a list that can boost to hit innately so that you're rolling three dice to hit and four dice to damage than it is to take Raven and have a list that is now boosted to hit, right?
Yes. I mean, one of my experiences with Raven was that there were a lot of times, this is, I guess, kind of just rehashing what you said, but there were a lot of times where kind of the buffs she had, there were too many matchups where they weren't really relevant. And like some matchups, they're amazing, but some matchups, they just don't, like, some of the to hits rolls are just so low that, like, the boost doesn't matter, or, you know, et cetera. So,
yeah, definitely.
I'm going to do a quick sidetrack real quick and ask you what you think of Kaylissa and why you think she hasn't been a more popular option.
So, Kaylissa, previously one of the most dominant casters in the entirety of the game. Entirely dominant. Man, Kaylissa was such a powerhouse. In Mark II with Force Wall, the most broken theme of all time. Man, Force Wall was insane. Your opponent can't run. Your opponent can't charge turn one, runner charge turn one?
Yeah,
is that how it worked?
Yeah, I think so.
That was gnarly in Mark II. That was like, in some matchups, you just automatically lost the game. Like, there was just, you wouldn't make it to scenarios. And, like, you just, it was impossible. Kaylissa would move up her army, your opponent wouldn't be able to move up their army meaningfully, and then Kaylissa would feat, and you would just lose the game because you didn't have enough threat ranges to do anything.
Right, yeah.
Man, that was insane. And in the start of Mark III, fellow Canadian WTC player, Johnny John Fares, one of my favorite people, played Kaylissa until his eyes bled. And his list pairing was dominant. He would just destroy people with that caster. So why isn't she played as often anymore? You know, again, I think this is just one of those things where Kaylissa doesn't do any dice things, right? Like, if you look at like all of the ret casters that are played right now, they're all specifically casters that do things with dice. Like Gorshade 4 has a hit buff and a damage buff. Assyria has Signs of Importance and a hit buff. Falseer has a hit buff and a damage buff and another damage buff. Thyron has a hit buff and a damage buff. You know, Raven has a hit buff and like so on and so forth. And Kaylissa just kind of doesn't have those things. Now, this isn't to say she isn't good. She's phenomenal. She's still one of like the strongest casters in red. But also the meta has kind of like changed away from what she does. Like, the thing that made her dominant was AFGs and her stationary gun, mechanical seizure gun, where she would stationary warjacks and then knock them down and then like disrupt them with Iris. And games would just end because your opponent's entire battle group couldn't function. She also had like a pretty decent assassination run with Phantom Hunter, which still exists. Like, the ret jacks guns have all gotten better. So innately, Phantom Hunter has gotten better. Which, I mean, I guess is kind of an argument for, like, maybe there's room for her to return. And, like, because, like, Rhett now has, like, the Hermit. It has Mark Target on Infiltrators. So, like, maybe you don't need to have a caster that hit buffs and damage buffs anymore because you have that innately in your list. And she can just now, like, have these really cool Phantom Hunter assassinations with Rat 8 power plus 2 to hit, plus 2 to damage jacks. Maybe that's actually somewhere to explore. That's kind of interesting. I'd play it.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. You could take like Phantom Hunter daemons are cool, so they ignore line of sight, so you could like get your Hellmouths exactly where you want them. Oh, that's kind of neat. Huh. I like that a lot.
She's always been one of my favorite casters that I felt like should be be more popular than she usually is.
Yeah, I mean, she's the type of caster where she has a lot of specific meta tools, and if those meta tools are relevant, she's extremely strong, right?
Right, yeah. All right, so this will probably be the last set of questions for this episode. Dr. Glenn says, what caster likes Aeturne the best, and what is your favorite list right now?
Okay, so Aeturne is really, really good. I'm a huge fan of that Warjax. I really like Assyria with Aeturne because ancillary attacking the armor piercing gun is really neat. But I mean, I think the obvious callouts are going to be like Thyron and Falseer, who can just like power it up with an extra focus every turn. I really like putting Aeturne on Alara. I keep calling it Alara Zero because you know, whatever. But Alara One with Aeturne is kind of neat. So like, if you have like a caster who's an Elaware caster, you can be like very focus efficient, sprint on its guns good. Gareth One, I think, is the caster who likes it the most. Because like when you feat and your opponent can't reduce focus or can't reduce remove damage with focus or transfer, and then you do two like power 10 armor piercing shots because you have crippling grasp boosted, like that kills almost every caster in the game reliably. And like that's pretty neat. I'm a big fan of that. I like making casters dead. As far as favorite list right now in Rhett, I think my favorite list is Falseer Shadows. Oh, maybe Gorshade for Defender. Oh my god. Alright, we're gonna go with Falseer Shadows because I don't like playing past turn two. Falseer Shadows is nuts. I have killed casters camping like their whole stack with shield guards, and there has been like absolutely nothing they could do to stop me. You get Mark Target, you get Hermit, you have Ghost Walk. You have ignoring line of sight guns that are blessed and magical and roughly 5 million, and they're rerolling damage rolls. And if they keep their caster super safe and like killbox themselves or something, then you just, and they're like a war machine faction, you just shoot all their infantry off the table instead, or their warjacks. And you're just like, okay, cool. Like, I've basically shot 2/3 of your army off the table a year ago. That list is bananas. Gorshade 4 Defenders is like also really cool. You got like the Rissavos package, you have Dauntless Resolve for the Rissavos, you have Clouds, you have a Trident, you have like the feat, which is insane with Rissavos. You have Scythe is like absolutely, you have Scythe and Hermit in the same list, and a damage and hit buff and stealth removal, so like Scythe gets turns where she just like murders whatever she wants because she's like a rat 12 power 14, sorry, rat 13 because you have Vet Leader from Aelith Fear, rat 13 power 14 weapon master that shoots 4 times. Like, I was killing Clockatrices in single activations with Scythe. It was awesome.
And I'm not sure if he meant favorite list overall in Rhett or favorite list with the Aeturne. You had mentioned Gareth. If you were to flesh out a Gareth list with that Jack, what would it likely look like, do you think?
So I would play Gareth 1 in Defenders. This is going to be a consistent theme across Rhett right now. Because Defenders gives you access to Scythe base and also gives you access to, you can take the Hermit on top of it. It's like a very flexible like solo package availability. And you also get Sylas, I think, base in the list as well. So like that combination of tools is really important for Gareth 1, because Gareth 1's feat is like there's like Gareth 1 and Gorton and maybe like Magnus 2 that have like these old style Mark 2 feats that are just like your opponent loses the game this turn, unless they like, you know, position smart and like play around it. But right. Like Gareth's feat is like very much like your opponent loses the game this turn. And with his like dual attack, gate crasher, like reposition, like his like slew of tools, he has crippling grasp. Like who was sitting there thinking giving Gareth like, I'm a crazy assassination caster that makes it so you can't transfer, and now I also have an arm defense and speed debuff or whatever. It's like awesome. It's so cool. His assassination run's insane, and it's like really hard to prevent. So like a lot of the times with Gareth 1, you don't need a lot of attacks to kill your opponent's caster. So, like, just Gareth 1, Crippling Grasping, and shooting his gun twice is enough to kill most casters on feed turn. But then, like, you have, like, Scythe and Eterne. So if you were to flesh out the list, I would say the list has, like, Nis Hunters in it, who are amazing now. And this is going to be, like, a consistent thing that I talk about with Rhett a lot. A lot of Rhett right now is, like, you want to bring flexible guns. Like, Nis Hunters are, like, the perfect example of a unit I love in Rhett. Because they like, synergize so well with Rhett's, like, overall kit now, where you have Hermit, you have, like, hit buffs in the list, you have, like, buffs for your infantry in the list, and now, like, Nis Hunters with Crippling Grasp and Hermit debuff on a target are shooting Rat 8 power 14 attacks that ignore cover and concealment base, and then they can CRA for power 16, and they're like, basically automatically hitting, and they're just demolishing models, like, they're not even there. And then, like, in melee, they're also really, like, just charging in at power 13 Weapon Master seems pretty good to me. So, if I were to do Gareth, I would do Gareth, Eterne, Chimera, Nis Hunters, Rissa Voss with a the Solus attached, Aelith, Veer, Scythe, Lanissa Rasal, because she is a Nis model, so also gets Vet Leader from Aelith Veer, Hermit, Silas, probably a Trident. And that's where I would start. I think there's, like, still, like, 15 points left. No. That's about max. Oh, Alara. You need Alara 1 in there with a, I think in my list, Alara 1 has a Harpy. The Harpy is, like, super cool in that list. Just to create, like, space and room for models to move around with its Thunderbolt shots. That's where I would start. That's a super cool list. The gimmick being, if you start your turn within, like, you know, 17, or I think it's 19, depending, I think it actually maybe even further than that, but if their caster starts the game not in the kill box, you probably have an assassination run. And then, if you're not assassinating, Crippling Grasp and all your guns and meaningful melee attacks are still really good, and Crippling Grasp and Rissa Voss have a really cool synergy, where you Crippling Grasp a unit that's going to charge your Rissa Voss. They're now worse at killing your Rissa Voss, and if they succeed, your Rissa Voss are better at killing them in response with their Dying Wish attacks.
Yeah. Okay, well, we will pause there on this first episode. Want to remind everyone to check out discountgamesinc.com, check out Muse on Minis, and go and subscribe at the Patreon to hear the bonus episode of Matt continuing our conversation with Retribution. So Matt, wanted to thank you very much for being willing to share your time and share your knowledge with us.
Oh, it's always my pleasure to be a hopefully positive force in the community. I enjoy talking, so this is perfect.
All right. Well, we will be chatting with you more here shortly.